Okay, so welcome everyone to the Starving for God Big Book Awakening workshop here. I'm Deb, and I'm really, really stoked to be working on food and body image recovery with you. So before we get started, let's just go around, and everyone who's currently on the line right now, I know we've got some people who are unmuted, and that's okay because we're just going to have everyone introduce themselves. So I'll start. So I'm Deb. I'm a compulsive eater, restrictor, drug addict, Al-Anon, chaos creator, lots of stuff going on. So who else do we have on the line today?
I'm Cammie from Visalia, food addict.
Hey, Cammie.
This is Cammie.
Lauren.
I'm from San Diego.
Hey, Tammy. And
hey.
Lauren.
Yeah, Lauren from Encino, compulsive overeater binger.
Awesome. Katie G from Boston, Mass, alcoholic food addict. Hi, Katie.
Shannon Kalinick, compulsive overeater from San Diego.
Hi, Shannon.
Hi.
Hi, Jan, compulsive eater, Burbank, also Al-Anon.
Hello, Jan.
Hey. Hi, so I'm Sherman Up, compulsive eater, drug addict.
Hi, who's that? Who just said that, Lynn?
Yeah, Lynn.
Hey, hi, Lynn. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, everyone.
And I'm Nikia. I'm a food addict from San Diego originally, but I moved up to Sacramento.
Hey, Nikia.
Hi, I'm Deborah from Encinitas, compulsive overeater and Al-Anon.
Hey, Deb. Glad you're on the call.
Thanks.
So everybody go ahead and star six yourself. Once you introduce yourself, just to mute yourself. And I'm going to just get rid of the little ding that goes on when people call. Okay, who else do we have on the line? Somebody.
Oh.
Somebody who's
friendly. Oh.
Hello? Who's there? Oh. It's cutting off.
Deb, compulsive overeater addict from San Diego.
Hi, Deb.
Hi.
Hi, I'm Judy, a food addict, alcoholic, drug addict, and workaholic. I'm from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Hi, Judy.
Hi.
So excited. And I know that there'll be more people joining us, so we'll just get started. Welcome. I'm so excited that that you're all here today, and continues to be a great, great topic to be talking about and getting into. So I'm just really excited that we're still in this work of looking at the mind. Before we jump into our prayer and meditation, I do just want to review. So we have been in the first half of More About. We're now going into the second half. So that's assignment 8. So if you reference your sponsorship guide, which, again, you can access from the bbastuff.com website, and, you should be able to get all the information that you need. You can always email me if you have any questions. Ideally, you have already met with your step partner and already done your assignment 7, and you're here today with questions answered from your idiot's guide, your transcription's already done, ready to have a conversation about the experience that you've had in the past and the truth that has been revealed to you as a result of going through the work this time around. So let's flip to the front of our books where we have transcribed the set-aside prayer, and we're in the mental obsession right now, so that's the set-aside prayer version that we're going to be reading right now. So we'll just go into that prayer, and then we'll go into a few minutes of meditation here. Let me just cue that up, okay? All right, so God, please enable me to set aside everything I think I know for an open mind and a new experience. help me see the truth about my mental obsession before I start to eat compulsively or restrict. Okay, so I want to start off just with centering us in where we are in the work. So we are still in the first part of the first step, right? Admitted we are powerless, dash, and our lives have become unmanageable. And before the dash, we're looking at our powerlessness. And so right now, I'm still looking at that. And we started out reviewing the circle and the triangle, right? So we started out in the very, very beginning of the book, and we started looking at these three parts of our triangle, and the unity and the recovery and the service, and we started getting honest. Am I actually only working one part of my circle or one part of my triangle and expecting the results of all three? Am I just working two parts? So am I going to meetings? And am I kind of doing the steps a little bit, but I'm not doing prayer and meditation? Or am I just going to meetings and not even doing the steps? I just do the steps once, and then I think I can just go to meetings. Or I think I can just work with others, but never actually do my own work. Am I unbalanced in my circle and my triangle? And then we moved into the preface and the forwards, and we learned that this is a textbook. And this is going to show me precisely how the people in this book have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And then I look at my experience, I lay it next to what the doctor's opinion shares with me about my physical allergy. And do I also have this phenomenon of craving that once I put that compulsive bite into my system, or once I skip that meal, that something actually happens inside of my system that's deeper than my mind. It's beyond my mind. It's like I can't actually, it has nothing to do with my thought process yet. And can I see that I am powerless once that is in me? Can I see that I am powerless over how much I do once I start? And then we get from the doctor's opinion, sorry, the sound is really bad right now. I don't know why there's some feedback. I apologize. And then we get from the doctor's opinion all the way to the bottom of page 22, where we're looking at this physical aspect of my body. What happens after I put it in my system? And then on page 22, it says, yes, sorry, then on page, the top of page 23, it says, yes, but this is going to be academic and pointless if I never actually put that compulsive bite or that acting out behavior into my system, setting the terrible cycle in motion. And so why is it academic and pointless? Because if I never do it, I don't have a problem. Great. Well, then just dry me out. Then I just won't, I'll just abstain. But it tells me that that's not going to work because the problem centers in my mind. And so what we started to look at in There is a Solution is we started to really identify, am I the real deal? Do I identify not with all the behaviors, because sometimes our behaviors are different, but do I identify with the fact that I lose control once I start, or I can't say stop? And then we get introduced to this concept of lack of power, lack of choice, and lack of control. And can I see that if I've lost one, I've lost all three? And am I really making the choice to act out or not to act out? Or is there something going on that is more than choice? Okay, so that's where we are. And so now we're getting into the chapter of more about compulsive eating or restricting. And we're still looking at this idea of power and control and choice. We're still going to be working with those terms, and can I see that once I've lost one, I've lost all of them? And we're also going to be adding three new terms. So I just want to pause for one moment. Is everybody muted? I'm just going to try to mute you because maybe that's going on. Maybe we'll get a little bit of a better sound quality if everybody's muted. Let's see if that works. So it tells me in my transcribing here at the top of the chapter, I mean at the top of the page on page 30, this chapter talks about most of us being unwilling to admit that we were real compulsive eaters or restrictors. And so we're still looking at what goes on in my mind with respect to food and the way I'm acting out around food without any of that actual acting out behavior in my system. Okay, so we're looking at what happens, what precedes that first bite or that first restriction. And I have to ask myself, where food is concerned or where food issues are concerned, am I mentally different than other people? So that's what we're looking at right here. And it's going to have me look at obsessions. It's going to have me look at thoughts that, so there's identifying obsession as thoughts that exclude or outweigh all others. And this term of illusion, which are false or erroneous, it's a false or erroneous perception of reality. So it's like a magician, like stuff that's going on out here. You don't really know what's happening out here. And then delusion. So that's what's going on inside of my mind. So it's the delusions of the mind, what's happening on the inside, and the lies that I'm telling myself. And so what I'm going to come to find is that, again, I have this like these three words together that I can interchange, that wherever I see the word obsession, I can also put the word delusion, I can put the word illusion, and it actually means the exact same thing. So there's a lot of juiciness in this reading today, and I definitely want to leave some ample time for sharing, because there's a lot to share on this. I want to definitely hear from you. And then I also, for those of you who listened to the recording that I sent out yesterday, I think it was, that had to do with, I think the title of the voice memo was, "Do You Need a Food Sponsor?" And I had a a message in there, and I got some awesome feedback from a number of you, and I would really love, whether you agree, disagree, whether you have a different experience, the same experience, I would love for you to share, because this is a really, really rich topic that relates specifically to the separation from ease, the dis-ease that we're all suffering with. So would love to have some time and space to dive into that stuff. Okay, so here we go. So most of us have been unwilling to admit that we were real compulsive eaters and restrictors. No person likes to think that she is bodily or mentally different from her fellows or from other people. So can I see that I'm bodily different, that when I put it in my body, I lose control? And can I see that I'm mentally different because my mind, I've got this mind that always takes me back, always takes me back. Therefore, it's not surprising that our eating careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove that we could eat or act around food like other people. Do I see that? The idea that somehow, someday, I will control and enjoy my eating is the great obsession, is the great illusion, is the great delusion of every abnormal eater. The persistence of this illusion or obsession or delusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. So we have to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were the real ones. This is the first step in recovery. So that's actually an important note for me to make. The first step is not that I admit that I'm powerless. The first step in recovery is admitting that I'm a real compulsive eater and restrictor, and it's conceding to my innermost self. And is that something that I have done yet? That's important. And then we get this really, really important statement here, and this is one of the most important, bold this, highlight this, underline it. The delusion that we are like other people, or presently maybe, has to be smashed. So have I thought that I could eat like other people? You know, I look at my history, and I see my friends having a casual bite of this or that, and or a splurge of something, and, you know, or going for hours without eating anything. You know, I kind of watch my friends, and I think maybe I could do that too. Or I have tons of friends who go on cleanses and detoxes and various kinds of things, and you know, have I thought that I could do that as well? Going on various diets, just joining the gym, just going to the nutritionist. Maybe I just need somebody to, like, just create that ideal eating plan for me. Maybe that's what it is. Or in program, you know, those friends of mine who just go to meetings, you know, meeting makers make it, you know, that kind of thing, people who are just involved in the fellowship, or people who went to treatment once and never did the steps. You know, am I in the delusion that I'm like those people? Or people who did the steps once and are living happy, joyous, and free and abstinent, and they've never done them again, and they never have to worry about continuing to stay in this program in their circle and triangle. It's just like, am I in the delusion that I'm like those people? Or people who only focus on the food or the diet part of this program, and they don't emphasize the spiritual aspect of the program. You know, am I in the delusion that I can find freedom and sanity in that path? So this is a really important statement, and I have to smash this. I have to see, for me personally, I can't do food the way other people do food. And I can't, like, do body image the way other people do body image. I mean, I watch friends of mine who have, you know, very, like, you know, average-looking bodies, who have very slim-looking bodies, who have, like, you know, heavier-looking bodies, who have a healthy body image. Like, I don't, like, I'm not like them, you know? It doesn't matter what my body looks like. I have the tendency for just complete body obsession. And I can't just walk into a situation, a restaurant, or sit down at a meal and not bring God into that experience. Like, I can't do that. I can't be, you know, you heard me sharing a few weeks back, you know, sitting at dinner with my best friend, sharing about some really, like, some really emotional
deep stuff, talking about like past relationships and like just, you know, that and I can't, I got so clear that I can't talk about emotional issues, you know, like deep emotionally triggering issues while I'm eating, because that is just, it doesn't go well for me, you know. Food starts to feel like comfort, and it starts to go down the tubes for me. So I got to be really clear. And then I also, you know, just as a result of being in this program and just getting honest, I can see now that I don't do relationships like other people, and I don't do money like other people, and I don't do business like other people, and I don't do, you know, like anything. Like, I don't live like other people. So I'm really clear that in my mind, I operate differently from other folks. And then why does it say, or presently maybe, because it could just say the delusion that like we are other people has to be smashed. But why does it say presently maybe? It's important for me to see that. And presently maybe, because they're saying, Deb, even today, even with some time, even with the recovery that you have, even with the service work that you do, you know, even though you go and you speak over at this meeting, and even though that you're running this workshop over here, the book's telling me you are not cured. You are still powerless over how much you eat or restrict, and powerless over staying stopped. You haven't regained that. You don't regain choice. You don't regain control. You've still lost your power and your choice and control today, with time, with abstinence. And so I have to ask myself, do I suffer from the delusion that with some time in the program that I can go back to certain foods and certain behaviors without consequence? And then we get this next paragraph here. We compulsive eaters and restrictors are men and women who have lost the ability to control our eating. And we know from the last chapter, I can say we are men and women who have lost the ability to control, or the ability to choose, or just have lost power around food and our bodies. We know that no real compulsive eater or restrictor ever recovers control. All of us felt at times that we were regaining control, that we were regaining power, that we were regaining choice. But such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, less power, less choice. Can I see that in my history? Which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. Some of us are in that right now. Some of us are having a really real experience with that right now, and I would love for you to share about your experience if you're in that right now. We are convinced, all of us, that compulsive eaters and restrictors of our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better. So can I relate to that? It's so important for me to turn all these statements into questions. If you aren't doing your transcribing, I can't implore enough. You aren't technically doing the Big Book Awakening, and it's really because if we're reading this as somebody else's experience, we are robbing ourselves of the power and the depth of how this work can come alive in our own lives. So I encourage you to sit with each one of those questions. So then it gives me this example. We are like men who have lost their legs. They never grow new ones. Okay, so imagine that you have this guy, and he's sitting on a couch, and he is paralyzed in his arms and legs, or he's got no arms and legs. And he wants to open the front door. Does that person have any power to be able to, on their own, no help, just sitting there on the couch and not able to operate arms or legs, does that person have any power to open that door? Does that person have any choice over opening that door? Does that person have any control over opening that door? No. But let's say two people walk into the room and pick that person up and take them over to the door, and then they can open the door. Yes, that's a power greater than themselves, right? So So this is what it's saying. We are like men who have lost their legs. They never grow new ones. Neither does it appear to be any kind of a treatment which will make these types of people who've lost their arms and legs, who've lost power, who've lost control, lost choice, like other people. I'm never going to become like other people. We've tried every imaginable remedy. In some instances, there's been brief recovery followed by always a still relapse. Has that happened to me? Is that my experience? Physicians who are familiar with compulsive eaters and restrictors agree that there is no such thing as making a normal eater out of a compulsive eater or restrictor. Science may one day accomplish this, but it hasn't done so yet. And that was written in 1939, and I don't believe that it has done so yet. So this page is going to go further on, and it's going to give me a list of like some various methods that we've tried, right? Because it's going to tell me, and I got to ask myself, by every form of self-deception and experimentation, have I tried to prove myself the exception to the rule? Am I trying to do that right now? Am I listening to this with one ear and then the other ear kind of like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that's me. I don't know if I'm the real one. Even though in the last chapter, when I read the description of the real compulsive eater or restrictor who had lost control over the amount or over staying stopped, I identified with that. I saw that I was the real one, but here I am just a few pages later, and I'm now trying to find the hole in the argument. You know, and so self-deception and experimentation. So it's going to go into it. So here are the methods that we've tried. And I just jotted down a few methods. I really encourage you to read. It tells you in the transcribing to read through this and underline what you relate to. I encourage you to just write in the margin what your experience is with this. So have you tried to, you know, only eat certain things? I'm only going to eat protein and veggies, or I'm only going to eat veggies, or I'm only going to eat a liquid diet. How about limiting the number of bites that you eat, right? Or, you know, limiting the portion size, or kind of, you know, like trying to just limit, oh, I'm just going to have like a little bite of that dessert or something like that. How about never eating in the morning? Just not going to eat until this time. Or never eating at night. I'm only going to eat until this time, and then I'm not going to eat, you know, after whatever time. Never eating certain foods at a certain time. You know, like all this kind of stuff. Have I tried to control this whole addiction by these kinds of things? Eating sweets or desserts only at parties or special events. Here's a big one that came up a lot in my life. Overeating and then going out and exercising immediately. So using that combination, that high-powered combination of a lot of food and a lot of exercise. Overeating, over-exercising. Have I used diet pills? Have I used drugs? Have I used rules like I'm never going to eat alone, or I'm only going to eat alone? That was a big one for me. I'm only going to eat alone. Never eating with friends or at restaurants. That was something that I tried for a long time. Or just eating once a day. I'm just going to have one big meal. I'm going to starve, restrict, whatever it is. I'm just going to eat once a day. Or I'm just not going to have a proper meal. I'm just going to snack all day. I'm going to graze. Have I done that? Have I just restricted during business hours? That was a big thing that I used to do, restricting during business hours, binging at night, feeling justified, right? Talk about that a little bit later. I have tried being in a relationship. You know, if the relationship's going to fix me. And then I've changed my obsession from food to relationships, you know, so just kind of swapping out what my drug of choice is at that time, or my drug of no choice, really, as we come to understand it. I've changed jobs and careers. I personally actually became a health and fitness professional. I mean, that's what I was for 8 years. So I definitely thought that I had, you know, that I could fix myself that way. Never having certain foods in the house, swearing it off forever, taking a vacation or a retreat, doing a workshop, reading an inspirational book or a self-help book. How's that worked for me? Traveling abroad, doing service work, philanthropy work. I actually have some friends who have, from program, who have gone to remote parts of the world to go do some service work, which is amazing. And I think someone even shared about this on the last call last week, that it was almost like, oh, well, clearly if I'm in this remote part of the world, like, that'll fix me. Like, I won't be able to act out in that way. And that didn't work, you know. So it's really important here to just start to write your own experience. And those are just some examples. And then it gives us a couple of experiments. So we're going to get two experiments in this reading here. And the first experiment is, it's going to suggest to me to go ahead and try some controlled eating or restricting. So, you know, let me head over to the nearest buffet and maybe just take like one bite of my trigger food. Or let me just practice skipping one meal and then just stop abruptly, right? Like maybe fix a full plate of my favorite things and then start eating and then just like stop abruptly with food still on my plate. Like, how's that going to work? Just try it. It says try that more than once. It will not take long for you to decide if you are honest with yourself about it. It may be worth a bad case of what? Of anxiety, of stress, of guilt, of an upset stomach, if you get a full knowledge of your condition. Okay, so that's the one experiment. It says on the first full paragraph on the page 32. Though there is no way of proving it, we believe that early in our compulsive eating or restricting careers, most of us could have stopped. But the difficulty is that few of us actually have the desire to stop while there is still time. We have heard of a few instances where people showed definite signs of being a compulsive eater or restrictor, and they were able to stop for a long period because of an overpowering desire to do so. So now it's going to give me this story. Can we get a couple case studies here that are really, really interesting to just consider and to lay my experience next to and to see, is this person talking, you know, speaking about me? So here we go, and we like to call this guy Mr. Carpet Slippers, because we don't ever get his name. So here's this guy. He was an ambitious and successful man. But he realized he would get nowhere if he overate or restricted, because once he started, he had no control. So he made up his mind, right, there's the mind thing, that until he'd been successful in business and had retired, he would not take another compulsive bite or skip another meal. An exceptional person, that he remained totally abstinent for 25 years and retired at the age of 55 after a successful and happy business career. Then, dun dun dun, he fell victim to a belief, which practically every compulsive eater or restrictor has, that after his long period of abstinence and self-discipline had qualified him to eat like other people. Out came his carpet slippers, and what's your favorite trigger food? You pick your favorite trigger food or your favorite acting out behavior. Out came that, and in 2 months, he was in a hospital, puzzled and humiliated. He tried to regulate, making several trips to the treatment center, then gathering all his forces, he attempted to stop altogether and found he could not. Every means of solving his problem, which money could buy, was at his disposal, and every attempt failed, and he was dead within 4 years. So, am I suffering from the delusion, the illusion, or the obsession that time is going to cure me? That time is going to fix my lack of power, my lack of choice, my lack of control? And am I still trying to use that self-will? And we spoke about this a little bit last week on the call, of those folks who have been in program who are focusing, or who have in the past focused more, or been in programs that focused more on the diet aspect of this program and didn't focus as much on the staying, doing the 12 steps every year, staying current in the work, and, you know, like, do I believe that, I just lost my train of thought there, so I'm just going to go back to what I have written here. Do I believe that time is going to cure me? I can't remember the point that I was just about to make. And then we get, on page 33, we get this really, really important part. The first full paragraph at the bottom of the paragraph, a few lines up from the bottom, and if you transcribe here, we write a must here, that it says, if we're planning to stop acting out, right, to stop compulsively eating, to stop restricting, there must be no reservation of any kind or any lurking notion that someday I'm going to be immune. And I always, when I'm taking someone through and I'm working with someone one-on-one or when I'm working in a small group, we take a moment here and we consider, do I have any reservations of any kind or any lurking notions that one day something's going to be different? And it's important for me to get really clear on if I do have something. Like, so I just started making a list of some things that have come up for me or for people who I've worked with in the past, and I encourage you to spend a little bit of time and just consider this. Because I have had the experience in the past, and, like, I mean, I've heard this over and over again. I call this essentially like a bad day on Earth school. You know, like, I had a hard day. Maybe someone said something really mean, or I, you know, I don't know, whatever. Like, make it up. Something happened, a bad day on Earth school, and I now feel justified. Like, I've got to get clear. How about, here's another one. Like, justifying my behavior because I've had a really hard workout. So do I think that something is going to change if I'm, like, on a really good exercise and diet plan? And, like, now I've got what it takes. Now I can do this thing. Do I have that as a lurking notion or a reservation that maybe I'm not like these other people? Because I think if I can just get back into that routine that I used to have of being fit, or if I can just fit well into my clothes, or if the scale says that I've lost weight, then I've got this thing, and then I'm okay. Or do I feel like really justified if I get sick, or if a family member gets sick, or terminally ill, or if somebody dies, right? Or like divorce, or a relationship ends, or I lose my job. Or it's like a special event, or it's a vacation. You know, do I have any lurking notion that I'm going to be able to eat the way other people do if one of these other things happens? So it's just important for me to get really clear on that. And then we get this second experiment here. So experiment number two is up on top of page 34. And experiment number two is, can I leave it alone for a year? No God, no program. So I'm just going to read what they say here. If anyone questions whether they've entered into this dangerous area, right, let them try leave their triggering behavior alone for a year. Leave your trigger food alone for a year. No God, no program. Just white-knuckle it. Or just don't restrict. If you're the real one and very far advanced, there is scant chance of success. In the early days of our compulsive eating or restricting careers, we occasionally remained abstinent for a year or more, becoming only serious again later. So though you made, this is so important, and I have this stuff highlighted because I have to read this, and I'm so grateful for doing the work every single year, because I very my like addict brain is very intelligent, and it will find, it will start to forget these details very, very quickly, or it'll start to find like the a loophole really, really quickly. So it says, though you may be able to stop for a considerable period, you may yet be a potential compulsive eater or restrictor. We think few to whom this book will appeal can stay abstinent anything. And when I say abstinent, I'm not just looking at sticking to a diet. I'm looking at freedom. I'm looking at sanity. I'm looking at joyousness. I'm looking at actually living in the promises of this program. Anything like a year. Some will actually be acting out the very day after making their resolutions, most of them within a few weeks. So here's the distinction, and this is why I'm not like those people in program who maybe went to treatment once and they're okay, or maybe they did go to that self-help workshop and it worked for them, or they read that book, or they went to that therapist. Remember, the psychological approach does work for some people. And so who are those people? Well, it's going to describe this for me right now. So it says, for those who are unable to eat moderately, the question is how to stop altogether. We're assuming that, of course, the reader desires to stop. So whether such a person, here it is, whether such a person can stay stopped upon a non-spiritual basis depends upon the extent to which he has already lost the power to choose whether he will act out, whether he will compulsively eat or restrict or not. So I kind of rewrote this a little bit differently in the margin for myself. I know we actually have this transcribed, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to read the transcription, and I'm also just going to read the little note that I have that helps me make sense out of this in wording that works for me. So the transcription that we get is, the difference between someone who can stop on a non-spiritual basis and someone who can't is that the person who can stop probably didn't lose the ability to choose. And so the way I wrote it, and again, I'll just read it even though it's kind of redundant, the people who can exert power of choice, control, and who can exert the power of choice, control, and power over how much they do once they start, and over staying stopped, right, both of those things, may not need the spiritual solution. So am I those people? Or do I have a problem with staying stopped? Do I have a problem with my lack of control? If I do, then I'm going to need a spiritual solution to this program. And so that's really, really important for me to get. So then on page 35, we get this description of some of the, they talk about there's these mental states. They want to describe some of the mental states that precede the relapse into acting out. And so they're going to share with me another case study here, and we're going to call this guy Jim. This is a great story. I love Jim. I relate to Jim. So here we go. Here's Jim. He's this good guy. He inherits this company, right? He's intelligent. He's likable. And he only becomes a compulsive eater or restrictor by age 35. He's symptom-free before that. But then within a few years, he's like full-on. He's the real deal. And so things go down the tubes for him. He gets into recovery, and he does just the beginning, right? He does steps 1 through 3. It says, we told him what we knew of compulsive overeating and restricting, which is step 1, and the answer we had found, which is in step 2, and he made a beginning, which is step 3. And then his life starts to turn around, right? His family was reassembled, and he began to work for the company that he used to own. A little bit of resentment there. And all went well for a time, but then what happened? He failed to enlarge his spiritual life. To his consternation, he found himself acting out again, half a dozen times in rapid succession. right back to binging and purging, went right back to skipping meals, went right back to just full-on, outright compulsive eating. What happened? He knew what was wrong with him. He agreed he was a real compulsive eater or restrictor and in a serious condition. He knew. But does the knowledge, is that sufficient? We learned that in the last chapter. Does just understanding my condition, is that going to be enough? So we now get a little bit more into his story, and I just love this story. And I really encourage you to spend some time writing in your own experience. So I've heard lots of different versions as I've worked with different folks who are working their BBA program through food. And so I'm just going to give you an example, but I encourage you to come to your own, find your own story in this. So we get this guy. I came to work on Tuesday morning, and I remember I felt irritated. And so I just have that word circled because that reminds me, restless, irritable, and discontent. And I remember that the doctor's opinion told me that I have this condition. And we're going to learn more about what's underneath that condition in a week or two. Or is it actually, in a week or two. But for right now, at least I know that I have this underlying restlessness, irritability, and discontentment, and that actually propels me for ease and comfort. So we get this. Well, because, you hear this guy. I had a few words with the boss. Can you only imagine? I mean, this is probably telling off the boss. Have I ever done that? Have I ever told off my boss? Or, yelled at someone at work? He says nothing too serious. I would love to be a fly on the wall for that. And then we get this account. Okay, so on the way, I felt hungry, and I stopped at a roadside place, or I stopped at a restaurant, or I stopped at Whole Foods, or whatever you want to write in there, where they have all my favorite foods. Okay, and I also just made a little note for myself here because I was also considering this from the perspective of anorexia, and it's absolutely like, if that is your story, you can absolutely find yourself in here too. You just need to get creative a little bit with how you describe it. I felt hungry, and so I decided to skip a meal. A little bit further down, you can say, I still had no thought that I would be restricting. You can still work with it here. So I encourage you to write your story in. Okay. So this guy thinks, I'm just going to get what? I'm just going to get a sandwich. I'm just going to get a salad. I'm just going to get something light. I'm just going to pick up a few things at the grocery store. I also have the notion that I might find a client at this place. Okay, so it says, I've eaten there many times before during the month, but I was abstinent. So I sat down with my abstinent meal, right? And what does this person decide to do? I decide to order a dessert, or I decide to order, I've heard, a glass of milk, and then I put a shot of chocolate syrup in there or something. Come up with something that fits for you. Still no thought of actually this going out of control. That wasn't even occurring to him. Suddenly, though, right, the insanity comes on suddenly. The thought crossed my mind that if I were to go and exercise right afterwards, that it could hurt me to eat a little bit more. This guy goes on and he does more and more, right? And he vaguely senses that, he vaguely senses that he's not doing anything right. So sanity comes on vaguely. But he feels assured because he's got the solution down. No, I'm going to go and exercise afterwards or this afternoon, or I'm meeting with my trainer, or if I'm skipping meals, it's like, nope, suddenly this thought crossed my mind. Wow, if I have a little bit of coffee, I'll be fine. Have I done that before? So you can see, and this just goes further and further, and he tries another and another, and this starts one more journey off to what, the treatment center, off one more journey into shame and guilt, one more journey to the treatment, to my therapist. Here was the threat of commitment into treatment, loss of family. What are you going to lose? What do you have to lose? Dignity, self-respect, your job, relationships, intimacy with family and friends, right? Not to mention physically what might happen to you. health stuff. The doctors told you that if you do this one more time to your body, if you continue to do this, this is what's going to happen to you. You know, so all of that stuff is on the line, and yet he says to say nothing of that intense mental and physical suffering, which this behavior always does. But we can't bring that into our experience of with sufficient force to deter us, right? And this person says he has much knowledge about himself, yet all reasons for not doing it were easily pushed to the side in the favor of the foolish idea that, hey, I can overeat or I can restrict. I'm just going to exercise afterwards, or I'm just going to have some coffee and I'll be fine. So do I recognize that in my experience? We call this plain insanity, they say. And how can such a lack of proportion of the ability to think straight be called anything else? We talked about insanity last time. We talked about how you hear all the time that insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. And then we spoke about how in the BBA we say, well, insanity is actually, for us, is doing the same thing over and over again, knowing that the results are going to be the same and you still actually can't do any different. And do I experience that to be true? And so I just have some questions that I extracted from reading this. So is any of this you? Have you started to act out without really thinking about the consequences and justifying why it was okay and then found that you couldn't stop or moderate? You know, so like maybe there's certain, right now in your recovery, maybe there's certain places that you just like wouldn't even be healthy for you to go. You know, like there was a long time, like in the beginning, where I was like, it doesn't feel good for me to just like go into this certain situation. Maybe it was like being at my family's house around a meal, or maybe it was going into a certain like, you know, all you can eat buffet or something like that. Like it just wasn't super healthy, but I would go in there justifying what's going to be different or not even really thinking at all. I'm just going to have the salad. And then found that, oh, well, maybe I'll just have a little bit of this because it's right here. And then I found that I couldn't stop. Or have you thought of the consequences but still found, and this is just straight from the book, right in the middle of the page on page 37, found some insane, what did I write here? Some trivial, insane excuse for taking that first bite or skipping that meal. Has that happened to me? We have this transcription right here in the middle of the page. Did my best thinking fail to hold me in check? And then the insane idea went out so that I overate or restricted anyway. Is that my experience? Have I gone out? We spoke about this a little bit last time. Have I gone out deliberately to binge or to restrict, feeling justified by anger or worry or depression or jealousy or the like? Because that's what it says here. It says, in some circumstances, we've gone out deliberately to binge or to restrict, feeling myself justified by nervousness, anger, worry, depression, jealousy, entitled, I wrote, or the like. But even in this type of beginning, we are obliged to admit that our justification for a binge or for a restriction was insanely insufficient in the light of what always happened. We now see that when we began to compulsively eat or act out deliberately instead of casually, there was little serious or effective thought during the period of premeditation of what the terrific consequences would be. So have I gone out deliberately to act out? And can I see now that my justification for doing so is insanely insufficient in the light of what always happens? Like, can I actually see, and this is just a note that I made for myself, so can just consider this for yourself. Can I see that my seeming choice to binge or restrict is itself an insane idea? And that little serious or effective thought is actually occurring? Like, am I actually really choosing? Can I see the insanity of my thinking? Because if I can see, you know, just going back to what we were reviewing from last time, if I can see from my history that when I compulsively eat or restrict, I can't control the amount that I do once I start, or I can't stay stopped. I always go back. If I see that to be true, and I see that all the intended suffering that it brings, I see my problems pile up on me, and I see the effect that it has on the people around me, why would I actually make the same choice to do it again? Like, is that really a choice? And sometimes when I decide I'm not going to compulsively eat or restrict, and then I do it anyway, despite not wanting to or meaning to, like, did I really have a choice? So I feel like what we need to get to here is not getting to that place of, you know, like you'll hear people say in, like, the rooms of AA, like, I just can't drink, you know, so our experience is like, or our equivalent is like, I just can't binge or I just can't restrict, you know. It's not that. I've got to see that I will, my mind will take me back to that compulsive bite or that acting out behavior unless something else gets in the way of me acting out. If something doesn't get in the way, I will act out. I'm without defense against that first bite or diet. And a day and a time is going to come, and I will. So this, I can't wait just to open up the call. That's pretty much what I wanted to share. I really want to hear from you because I just feel like there's a lot of rich discussion here, and we don't have a lot of questions from the Idiot's Guide, but I feel like what opens up, what's possible in this conversation is pretty wide. So I'd like to, at this point, open up the call, and I would love for you to to share your experience. You can share, you know, do I have any reservations or any lurking notions? You can share if you feel like you really are in the grips of your progressive illness right now, you know. Like, we would love to hear about that, some of the methods that you've tried. I would just really, really love to open the call up. So go ahead and star six yourself if you want to share. Have I muted everybody so that they can't get on the call? Oh, you guys are all muted. Okay. Let's see. Okay. Hang on. Everybody's unmuted. Okay. All callers are muted now. You can unmute yourselves. So go ahead and star six yourselves. I'm so sorry.
This is Katie from Visalia.
Oh, hey, okay, so let's go Katie first, and then let's go Cammie second.
Okay, thanks, everyone. This is Katie G., food addict, alcoholic from Boston, Mass. And I just want to comment on that last piece that you were talking about. I was really struck. So I've been abstinent, I was abstinent for many years, and I really think I started to worship, like, you know, thinking that having that 8 years was going to give me something, that somehow you were talking about, Debbie, how somehow, like, you know, that period of, like, control, like, somehow I was going to be okay. And what I see is that, you know, over a period of time, these, like, subtle shifts, like, I'm going to be okay now. So, like, I went from having very clean and clear commitments around not getting on the scale, right, which may not sound like a big thing, but for me it is. And I started getting on the scale and being like, well, whatever, it's not that big of a deal. And, like, I'm not kidding, like, next thing I knew, I was getting on the scale 20 times a day again. Like, and that was pre, like, I used to get on the scale that much before, you know, Overeaters Anonymous. And then, like, drinking some tea that I really should not be drinking, and have, like, just starting off with one, and over a period of time, like, thinking, oh, it's not, you know, it's not going to hurt me, and here's how it's not going to hurt me. And then the next thing I knew, I was, like, you know, drinking like 16 tea bags, and then like not weighing fruits, and I need to weigh all my fruits, and like the next thing I knew, I was having panic attacks in Whole Foods trying to find the biggest apples because like I needed them to like help me. And I'll just share this last piece, like when I went out into relapse, I remember so clearly being like on the phone with my ex-boyfriend, because that's like what it always has happened to me. That's happened to me twice in a break of abstinence, and being on the phone and being somewhat irritated and being like, okay, you know what? Like my happy thought, I'm just going to have a few rice cakes. Like you go do your thing. You're fine. Go screw. I'm going to have a few rice cakes because that's my voice, right? Like I can't tell him somehow, no, you tearing me down is not acceptable, right? And so then I'm eating the rice cakes, and suddenly the thought crossed my mind, like, fuck it, I don't even care, like, and that's where that 8 years came in. I was like, I had 8 years, but I didn't even care, you guys, like, I didn't even care, like, I, 228 pounds and 110 pounds, like, I'm a crazy, crazy girl, like, I've done crazy, crazy things with food. And I had all that evidence. I've got the pictures. I've got the stories. I've got the drama. And yet here I was driving to Whole Foods, and I could not stop myself. And I really appreciate the way you really brought that to me, and that subtle insanity of, like, for me, there's a reason I have these commitments and boundaries, because once they start getting gray for me, like, life is gray, but, like, once the food stuff, once I start receding on that, the next thing I know, I'm paralyzed face down in the food and making decisions like that food is the only thing that's ever going to fix me and free me and get me out of that relationship. So I just was really, really excited by that. Thanks.
Thanks, Katie. Awesome. Cammie.
Hi, everyone. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Thanks, Deb, for your share and going into the work today, the pages. That was great. Thank you for the person that shared. And I just wanted to say currently where I'm at in my program is that I am not doing as well as I want to be, but nevertheless, I don't really have another choice right now. And I've missed my home group meeting about 3 weeks in a row. Once because I was at the gym. Twice because I was working. I've skipped out on I've rescheduled with my step-partner about 3 or 4 different times from being just too overworked and tired and busy. And I am taking diet pills for the past 3 days, restricting and overworking out, but not binging and purging, which is my disease. And that's how I do my cycle. To stop the cravings and the binging and the purging, I take diet pills and restrict and exercise and on and on and on. I'm not praying and meditating like I should be with 84 and 86 when I did start this work, except for the past couple of days. But I have managed to do my work and meet with my sponsor, my step partner throughout, do the questions, transcriptions, and readings. And which I did today, and I haven't been present for the call with Deb. I've just been listening to the recording. And so needless to say, I'm full force in my disease. But I'll tell you what, I've come to some major truths about things, and I don't want to be dishonest about where I'm at in my program. So I read 84 to 86 this morning, but I haven't been spending time with God. And so all these things, I'm just kind of doing the questions and the readings and meetings when I can and listen to the recording. So I was reaching out to Debbie. I was reaching out to Deb and Shannon, my step partner, and then Debbie said she was meditating about something, and she said, you know, what's it going to take for you to spend time with God? And I was at work listening to the message, walking down the hall, and it just, bam, hit me like lightning, and I stopped in my tracks, just went into the supply room and stood there for a minute like, oh, my God. That really hit me because in the back of my mind I'm thinking, you know, I have this voice that says, you know, it's me. You need to stop and spend time with me. You need to pray and meditate and do that part of your program as well as the other parts. And that was really helpful. And so with the questions, well, first of all, I wanted to share something with the group that has been really helpful in having a powerful experience and a more personal experience with the book. And that is that I know we have a lot of transcribing and a lot of writing in our pages, but I don't, on some of this, I don't rewrite the word. I just do it as I'm reading it in my head. And I'm just going to read a little tiny bit so I can make true what I'm trying to say, so I can convey what I'm trying to say for those of you who are reading through the book and having a hard time with this part of the book, which I was. And it's personalizing it. Wherever it says we or our, I say I and me. So I have been unwilling to admit that I was a real food addict. I don't like to think that I am bodily and mentally different from my fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that my eating career has been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove I could eat like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, I will control and enjoy my eating is my great obsession. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it. I pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. I learned that I had to fully concede to my innermost self that I was a food addict. This is the first step in recovery, the delusion that I am like other people or presently maybe have to be smashed. I as a food addict. So if you get the idea from that, all the way through this chapter, it says, I, me, I, me, I, me. And it really gives you a whole new personal experience with saying it to yourself out loud, and it becomes a lot truer. I love what the examples were of methods we have tried. I've done all of those things, and I had an experience where I was a bulimic for a couple of years when I first got sober. 12 years ago, I got sober from alcohol and drugs, and I immediately started binging and purging. And I was with a man for 8 years, and he came to me and he said, look, we're going to make this relationship work. I love you. You can't be doing this. And I said, okay. So I stopped. I stopped throwing up, and I said to myself, okay, if I eat it, I own it, period. If you eat it, you own it. So if you're going to face the consequences of eating that whole plate of food, you are going to own it. So that's the deal I made with myself for 6 years.
Awesome.
So for 6 years, I did not grow up. So the obsession of the mind, the body image, constantly trying to manage my weight, dieting, roller coasters, compulsive overeating, weight gains up and down, crazy fad diets, all that continued, but I just didn't throw up, and I thought I would never throw up again. I thought that part of my life was over. And so when we split up, and it was a major breakup, and I immediately started, and I haven't been able to stop since. And so it was just real interesting to me to see what my disease was doing, you know?
Totally. Thank you so much, Cammie.
Thank you guys so much.
You just shared a lot that we, thank you very, very much. Yeah, awesome. Thank you. Let's get some other folks who want to share about their experience.
Hi, this is Lauren.
Yeah, hi, Lauren.
Hi. Well, when I started reading more about alcoholism, I wrote on the page, it makes me feel sad to know that this is me. And in answering the questions that I shared with my writing partner, I wrote that it's hard for me to say that I'm different. I feel really sad. I don't know if I've admitted to my innermost self that I am a compulsive overeater. binger, and it's nice to know that I'm still in step one, and that's exactly kind of where I'm supposed to be. But I got this overwhelming feeling when you were talking that I am really, really grateful for this disease. Mm-hmm. And I consider it a dis-ease. Mm-hmm. And it's a dis-ease that centers in my mind. Because I'm really grateful for it, for what it has brought me. It has brought me God and this program and a whole way of thinking and doing life and looking at people. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't make me feel so sad anymore. Mm-hmm. And even that sadness made me feel unique. And mm-hmm. for me feeling unique is a very pejorative thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's pejorative for me to feel unique. It is not like a wonderful, oh, I'm so unique kind of feeling. It's
right.
not that.
Right. Right. Yeah.
And I mean, for me, it feels like it means I don't belong. And not feeling like I don't belong has been a theme for me my whole life. But I'm not so sad anymore to realize that this is me. And I just got that feeling when you were talking. And it feels really quite wonderful. And I'm really mm-hmm. happy about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just hope I remember this. It stays with me.
Yeah. Girlfriend, listen to the recording again. If you ever forget, I'm going to be like, Lauren, go listen to a recording on More About. Great. Thank you so much for your share. And, yeah, because I hear what you're saying in that. It's when I get that this is me, then if I do what they did to get the recovery and to get the promises, like if this is me, then I can do what they did and then I can get that same thing. So there's something in it, and I love the admission of just, you know, holding on to that. I so relate to that. Like, I'm so unique, I'm so different, that like yeah, kind of using that as fuel to justify my behaviors. So it's interesting because we are talking about that I'm different in certain ways, but I know what my victim brain does with that, and I can kind of take that and run with it. Let's get some other shares. Who else wants to share? Who's that?
Hi, Jan in Burbank.
Hey, Jan.
Hey, compulsive eater, and what I love about
Hi, this
is
Cheryl. Can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah.
No.
Okay. Oh, what sorry. Yeah, we got someone on the line. Go ahead. Star 6 or so.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Just go ahead and star 6 or so. We've got somebody else.
Hi, this is Cheryl.
Cheryl.
Hi, you can hear me. Hi Cheryl.
No. Can you actually go off the line for a second? Can you star six yourself? Hello? Okay. Jan, are you there?
Yes.
Okay. Jan, you go ahead and share. Sorry, I just want to say something because I said that was really weird for Cheryl. Cheryl, for some reason, when you got onto the line, the line got a little distorted. So we're just going to try to just keep Jan on right now, and then we'll try you next. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. For me, I've tried so many things, and I love this chapter because I cannot eat like other people. And there are times when I can, like maybe 2 seconds, you know. And I used to go back and forth with that. Well, gee, I could go out to eat with her and have a salad and iced tea and be good. But it's kind of the analogy for me was there's somebody at work who has really bad allergy problems. So if we look at his allergies as a disease, there are times he can go outside and he's fine. And there's other times when he cannot. If the wind's blowing or somebody just mowed their lawn, he's just a mess. That's me. I have this disease, and I never know when my mind is going to get messed up with it. Or, you know, I smell something or I think of something. Or so I just wanted to say that about the mental part of I know now after today that I can't eat like other people. And I didn't mm-hmm. want to accept that. I didn't want to accept that. And I want to say real quick that it used to be really confusing for my family. Like, my mom and dad would try to accommodate me, and they would say, okay, we want to have you over. We're not really sure how you're eating. And it's mm-hmm. like, wow, yeah, there were times I didn't know how I was eating either. Let's see, can you have this? Can you have that? So with that being said, I want to. Is this a good time for me to touch on God
yes.
and my food?
Okay. Yes.
Okay. You had asked me that question. I'm the one that Deb and I had talked during the week, and she said, "Well, why do you think you need a food sponsor?" And it just stopped me in my tracks because I thought, and I wrote this. I said, "My higher power. If I'm not connected with God, I'm not connected with myself. And if my hand, if I'm not holding my hand with my higher power, then my hand is in the food." And I don't know if that makes sense to anybody, but it really helped me. And what happened to me was a really dear friend of mine, she's not in program, and this is where the set-aside prayer is so great, because I have to set aside what I think I know. I have to put that way over there and set it, not only set it aside, like throw it away, because I think I know what's best. So she's lost about maybe, say, 80 pounds, and she's exercising in a healthy way and ended up teaching anyway. So I told her, I said, "Deb, you look great. You know, how's it going?" And she ended up helping me so much and recommended a few things how to adjust. She said, "Well, give me an example of what you're having, like, let's say lunch, dinner." She ended up, who would have known that someone not even in OA, not even in a 12-step program at all, she, in that moment, God was speaking through her, and she helped me so much, and I talked to her probably 4 or 5 times a week now, and she's not my food sponsor, she's not in OA, but she's helping me. So I'm having a new experience, and I don't know what it's going to look like even a week or a month from now. But I know that I've set aside my old ideas for now. I'm getting more clear on what my food plan is. I'm writing down my food again. And it just feels so good to be so connected. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jan. And I definitely, I want other people to share about their experience. And I also, you know, when Jan and I were speaking, and one of the things that she said, that she asked me was, "Do you think it's okay if I gave this example of how somebody outside of the program helped me?" And here's the thing is that I feel like if we are putting our relationship with God first and we're saying, "God, please help me shape a sound ideal with how I eat and how I am with food. You know, please keep me," hi, Cheryl, give me 1 second. Please keep me sane and peaceful, how, you know, show me what peaceful eating looks like and all that stuff. And then we're open and we're receptive to the angels and the people that God puts in our way or in our life, in our path, then, you know, then I might be receptive to something that somebody says, and I might be receptive to, you know, like some of the feedback that I got from some people was, it really, really helps me to, you know, commit my food to somebody. Well, fantastic. Like if it's coming from something that feels intuitively guided from my connection with God, and I'm feeling like that's a really, really supportive thing, then fantastic. Go ahead and do that thing. It's not to say that using the tools of the program, like I heard you say, Jan, that you're using writing down your food, and that feels really supportive. And I know I shared, like, on one of the first calls that I felt guided to weigh and measure, but it was, or actually to just measure, but it was coming from, like, an internal place that felt aligned with
the guidance that I was getting versus just being a set of rules that somebody was giving me. Well-intended rules, but coming from the outside in. And I find that when my guidance comes from the inside out, it might look very similar to some of the things that somebody else told me. But because it's coming from my connection with God, the source, it has a totally different effect in my system and on my program. So thank you for sharing that, and I encourage other people to share their experience. Sounds like, Cheryl, you're on the line from New Zealand. Is that true? Yeah? Are you there?
Hi, Deb. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, Cheryl, compulsive overeater restrictor from New Zealand. Good to be on the call today. I've really enjoyed the sharing. And what it's invoked in me is made me sort of think back over my, time in OA. And when I first came in, I was a grazer. I was an all-day grazer. And my very first sponsor helped me get my eating into 3 lots a day. And that was all that was suggested, back then. And as that happened, the content began to change. At the beginning, it still had binge foods in it for that first month. All I did was stop eating all day and get into 3 slots of eating, and which still included binge foods. But that was how it started for me. And then slowly it cleaned up, and the binge foods went, and the freedom started to come. And at that point, I had 8 years of back-to-back abstinence. And then complacency and, cocksuredness came in, the ego rebuilt, and I was very untreated. And I relapsed, and I actually walked out of the rooms for 18 months and, gained 25 kilos and full of shame. And it wasn't the food that drove me back into the rooms, it was the mental obsession that drove me back into the rooms, because I couldn't stand living with my head anymore. I was at that point of, the jumping off place, and I just couldn't stand being in my own skin. I felt, all the shame and humiliation of having to walk back into the doors of Overeaters Anonymous. And, that was part of my ego reduction. And, I've only had 14 months clean and abstinent again, and what I learnt was when I went through a depressive cycle, which I wanted to disown by labelling it as menopausal depression, but it was really just the food obsession had come back into play. And I like that thing that Dan says, depression is just chronic self-pity, because that's really was my experience during that time. And doing the work was the only thing that has given me that entire psychic change. And I had watched people, where I live in New Zealand, there were 2 people that I saw that had freedom from the food obsession and were at that time within their own being. They were well, and I wanted what they had. And I went before God, and I think this is really what I need to share today, is that I took it upon my will that I would try to eat like them. And because I could see that they could eat at a time when God nudged them to eat, and they could be God-guided at the quantity to eat. And I came from a weighed and measured food plan, because that gave me safety and security, and I knew my nutritional needs were being met. And I went before God's nudging, and I relapsed. And I was in that depressive cycle and relapsed for, I always thought it was a year, but I was sharing with someone else as I was guiding them through the work last week that I think it's actually longer. I think it might have been more like 18 months, even 2 years. So I've got to go back and do my own chronological look at that, because that's part of my denial too, of how long I was living in this madness. And I would get some pockets of time off the food in that relapse cycle. I'd get 2 or 3 months up and I think, yeah, I've cracked it. I now really understand, that I'm powerless over food and my life is unmanageable. And but I hadn't surrendered the fight. I still didn't have this inner peace that I've been gifted with today. And it was really only doing this work of BBA and getting out of myself and the thing, you know, intellectually I can say it was by following this process of BBA that has, you know, I haven't experienced an entire psychic change today. And I do eat with that freedom that I wanted and I saw in other people. And I eat very much God-guided. I eat when God-guided. And, you know, I've just been away for a weekend with friends and family. And, you know, I was concerned because every meal was going to be out, every meal, like breakfast, lunch and dinner. For 3 days, and I just kept on saying, okay, God, what do I need to take? What is my side of the street that I need to take to keep me connected to you, to keep me safe with this food, because I am not a normal eater. The other three people I'm traveling with are earth people, and they can eat normally. And, you know, so I packed what God instructed me to pack to keep me safe, and, you know, it wasn't a deal today, and that's the freedom that simply by embracing what BBA has got on offer for me and really having an experience with it, that I have been gifted this freedom. And I sort of think, how did that happen? And I mean, practically I know how that happened because I followed the instructions and I was teachable and I was disciplined and those sorts of things. But it is that entire psychic change that has come about in spite of me. You know, and I think it's important because, you know, I was sitting in that relapse cycle feeling so damn miserable and sorry for myself. And, you know, my poor little OA home group was putting up with me week after week, coming and whinging about life and doing nothing about the solution, you know, just sitting in the misery of my disease. And, you know, God lifted that out of me. And that's not of me. That's not of my doing. That has simply been surrendering to this work and having an open mind to a new experience and taking that beyond just my recovery life, like being away on the weekend. I had this new experience of something that I never ever thought I'd find myself in. And, you know, the opportunity came along and the consensus in the car was, yep, we'll go and have a go at doing that. And that was, you know, the difference. I'm open to God today and I'm open to his leading. And I was stuck in that mental obsession for so long. And I'm just so grateful that, you know, I have been relieved of it. So thanks, Deb.
Thanks.
Hey, Debbie, it's Tammy in San Diego.
Hey, Tam.
Hey, how are you doing? Thank you, everybody, for their shares. I really, really, really appreciate it. And it was interesting that you sent out that the thing about the food sponsor, but I'll share about that in a minute. This is like my favorite chapter, and because it so speaks to me, because it is me, and it is very personal. It's like, you know, page 30, you know, it talks about, you know, the illusion, delusion, and you know, the obsession. And I'm just so, when it comes to food, I am so twisted. I mean, I just cannot, you know, we talked about, you know, A, B, you know, I can't, you know, one minute I'll be saying, you know, oh, I'm not going to do this. And then one minute I'm doing the next thing, you know, and the food sponsor thing, it was funny because, you know, I have a really great sponsor, strong BBA, but she's very busy. I don't know even how many sponsees she has, but, you know, I kept on struggling. I am in the first step. I am really in the first step, and I am so freaking powerless. And I kept on struggling. You know, I'd have day, you know, a few days, and then I'd struggle with my food. And so I felt that need, and I totally agree with you on if you have God, that, and if you are God-powered, there you wouldn't need a food sponsor. But I do believe in OA, whatever program, with the food, we really do need more support than the norm. It's not like the alcohol, because I am an alcoholic, I'm a drug addict, and the food kicks my butt, because you just never know what's going to trigger you. just you never know. And if you, and it does talk about, you know, the, what is it, Jim failed to enlarge his spiritual life, you know, what is that? And that to me is 10, 11, and 12. And I fight daily with me. I fight daily. I fight checking out. That has been my MO. It's been my MO for the last probably 2 years since my mom passed that, you know, passed. And, I'll check out, you know, check out with food, with TV. And then the new thing is with solitaire. I mean, I don't even just watch TV. I have to play solitaire on top of that. So I am so over the place and so checked out. So anyway, I did ask somebody and one of my old sponsees to help me and give me some support around the food because I want to check out. And so so what happened the first, like, couple of days, it was really awesome. She really pointed me to God. And it really brought me back to showing me how little I was bringing God into my food and going to the freaking grocery store and going out to eat. And, you know, and so I was trying to pray, you know, and do these things and bringing God. And what a difference. But I daily struggle with that checking out, you know, and, you know, I had these great intentions. I'm going to do this. And, you know, and I just get so sidetracked. And so it's just a battle. I'm in one. I'm ready to be out of one, to be honest. I'm hoping magically, you know, everything's going to be wonderful after step one, you know, I don't know. But, I mean, and it's a good thing. I'm getting a good experience, a first step experience, and seeing new depths to the powerlessness that I have. And I don't want to take up too much time, but, you know, you talk about reservations or we get that sure cock, like, you know, I'm like, what is it, the slipper guy. And because I've had periods, and I always end up going back. And it's like, what takes me back? And, like, I remember right before my mom died, I was, like, choosing. Of course, you know, it just was manifesting in different areas, but I thought I had it. You know, I was vegan. I was being healthy. I had just lost 25 pounds. And, you know, all was great, you know. And I'm like, I'll never go back. And I say that every time, and then I do, you know. And it's scary. It's really scary. That has been my experience. And I really want that, you know, it's very attractive, that permanent abstinence. But like I said, it's an internal battle every day. You know, I'm doing my 84-88. I didn't today. I kept on saying I was going to do it. I had it out, and then I'd get sidetracked, and that's what I do. So I love all the shares, and I thank everybody. I thank you for this group, and it's been really awesome. But, yeah.
Hey, Cam, before you get off the line, I've got a question for you. So.
Okay.
That was great. Thank you so much. And I love what you just shared. And it sounds like your food sponsor, it sounds like maybe it's the food sponsor who's from the BDA. It sounds like your food sponsor guided you with some questions to God, which is awesome. So my question for you was, because I know you've been in program and you've seen a lot and you've experienced a lot and you've served a lot. Like, what have you seen work in terms? Because, like, what does this food, like, what is your expectation of what a food sponsor is supposed to do? Maybe let me ask with that.
Okay. You know, I have a lot of knowledge. I talked with my sponsor about this. You know, knowledge means nothing. Means nothing. You know, I know so much of this BDA. I know, but you mentioned it. It slips away. I forget. I mean, I forget big time. What are my expectations? Part of me, when I really want to act out with food, I really don't like having one, to be honest. And then, but I don't want to lie either. It keeps me accountable because I'm a freaking liar. I'm a cheat and I'm a liar when it comes to, I am so dishonest. And I'm so even dishonest with myself. I am the one who has that mental blank twist. I don't even think about it. I was like, somebody can mention something, and then all of a sudden, I'm like, I'm there. I'm like, I'm going for it. So, I'm a tough case. I am such a tough case. But it just keeps me accountable, and it's helping me, and, you know, and I'm hoping that I won't need that forever and ever and ever. I'm hoping that I'll end up growing that connection with God, but that needs strength. I'm in the beginning, and I do believe that when you're in the beginning and you're struggling with your abstinence, I think extra support is a good thing. I do believe that.
Yeah, so I'm curious, like, I'm just curious, actually, like, specifically. So, like, when you say keeps me accountable, like, are you, like, is it just that you're committing your food to somebody? Is that what it is? Or that like, you're asking for that person to shape your eating plan? That's my question.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. It's just being accountable. I will put in there, like, I'll even take pictures. I'm like, I think this is moderate, you know, because, like I said, I'm very dishonest. And I'm in a lot of delusion about a lot of stuff. I'm still doing, like, cheese is a problematic, but I'm doing cheese still. But it didn't affect me, the last couple of days. So I don't know if that's what that is, or, you know what I mean? It's a
but
different
kind
of
cheese. Are you committing your food, I guess just, like, without the details, like, I'm just, like, specifically, logistically, I'm just trying to understand, because there's so many people that approach me about having a food sponsor. Is your understanding of a food sponsor just that you are committing your food to somebody?
I am not doing a commit. I do it afterwards. It's more of a being accountable. And I made, like, a phone call. Like, I told her I was struggling. Like, I had a couple rough days. I wasn't feeling good, and I went to the food. And so then we talked. And so it helped, she is BBA, and she helped me, you know, it's like, okay, pray before you go into the store, you know, because then I want, instead of going, it's like, okay, God, give me the strength and willingness to go towards the foods that you wish me to have, instead of me going for the comfort foods and acting out, that's going to take me out, you know what I mean? So it's just getting that extra support and talking to someone. I don't know, it's not, I don't know if that's answering your question.
That's great. I know I put you on the spot. It's okay. That was great. Thank you.
No problem.
That was great. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Who else wants to share?
Hey, Deb, this is Katie G. Do you mind if I chime in for just 3 minutes about the food sponsor thing?
Sure.
Okay,
sure.
I'll be really quick because I know there are so many people. But I just wanted to say, so for me, I really appreciate the way you said it. Part of coming alive with the big book and trusting God has, like, part of trusting God meaning, for me, means starting to trust others. And I really don't have, like, I really relate to the craziness in my head and really not being able to know, like, you know, what is best for me. Like, I have a lot of fear, and so I tell myself a lot of lies about what kinds of foods are and are not okay. And, you know, with my sponsor, we developed, I developed with, you know, I've had a plan for a very long time and went over all the foods that are, like, in the world, red foods, foods that are very dangerous for me, green foods, foods that are okay, and then also food behaviors. So like, I have a lot of tendency to eat, you know, quote-unquote abstinent food in addictive ways. And so what helps me is, not making my sponsor God, because I review my 11th step with her every morning, the formal step 11 that I write in the evening, and then, like, where I fell short the next morning, the next day, the day prior, what my plan is for today. But part of my integrity to her, to God, is by committing my food to her, because it helps me just say that out loud to another person. And it's like, I don't know, I just get, I get a lot, because for me, what's happened over the years is I'll make commitments and then it will erode. And part of my 11-step form, I just use 84 to 88. I follow the questions that are outlined when we retire at night, but I ask myself specific questions about the food, because I just need that reminder, like, where am I with the food? Because food and food behaviors, like anorexic behaviors, like the scale, like, weird things with spices and sweeteners, they all block me from God, and I can't, for me, just having me and God, like, I will get blocked again. So I think the way other people do it, like, that's great, but I just wanted to let people know that's how I do it. You know, and I know a lot of people who, like, have used a nutritionist and other things and then, you know, formulated a plan. For me, it's very important to know what it means to be abstinent, have a very clear idea of what abstinence is and what is not, so that I know when I'm, you know, abstinent with my food and my food behaviors. Thanks.
Thanks. Yeah, I love this conversation, and I'm really grateful for the shares, and I feel like we're all really talking about the same thing, and because it really comes down to, if I'm centered in God and I'm asking to be guided, and then I'm open to how, you know, to the intuitive guidance that I get. And so I love that. And so if there's tools that have worked, that are working in my life, that are helping me, I mean, I know that I've got a friend who I think is a part of this workshop who she said she's been clean and clear and happy and abstinent for years, and she calls in her food. So I'm not saying that that's wrong or bad, or that is working at cross purposes with the message that I left. It was just getting God first and allow that to be an inside out process, which it sounds like everybody who's sharing, it sounds like that's where it's coming from. So that's beautiful. Who wants to share as we get back into the chapter specifically of more about compulsive eating and restricting, looking at our insanity, looking at our delusions, looking at our illusions, and am I in the delusion that I'm like other people, and have I tried many methods to prove that I could eat and act like other people around food? What about Deb or Deborah? Want to share?
Deb, this is
Hi.
Lauren. Hi.
Hi.
I just spaced out for a moment. Could you repeat your question?
Uh-huh. I just said let's get back into the questions of, am I in the delusion like I'm other people? When it comes to food, and just getting us back into looking at the insanity of that first thought, the insanity of our behavior, so just directing us back into the work.
This is Cammie. Deb, are you asking a numbered question from the Idiot's Guide? Are you making a general?
No. Yeah, no, it was just a general. It was just anybody who wants to share on the reading, really, and on the work. But, yeah, it was just general. Mm-hmm. We didn't have a lot of Idiot's Guide questions, so I'm just going off of general.
Hi, Deb. This is Deb from San Diego. Hi. I just, in looking at some of the methods I tried to deal with my compulsive overeating, one of the main things that comes to mind, well, the most insane one I can think of, out of all the insane ones, is the high-protein diet. I remember years ago I was on that. My sister-in-law turned me on to it. And I went to work one day, and this gal at work had taken a nutrition class, and I told her what I was doing. And she said, oh, my teacher said that's one of the worst things you can do. And, you know, my first thought was, well, I'm losing weight,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's like that just insane control no matter what. That's what comes up for me. And just proves to me one more time that I'm the real deal. So I just wanted to share that. Because that kind of diet can really take you out. And thank God I got metabolically resistant to it and started putting on weight. So God was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself in that bit as well as all, but especially then because I could have really harmed myself. I was jumping out of bed in the middle of the night with leg cramps and heart palpitations, but it didn't faze me because I was losing weight.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's just, oh, my God, angels are watching over me. So that's all I got. Thank you so much. And thanks for a wonderful share and everybody else. I really enjoyed this meeting.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Deb. Any final shares? Anyone have a burning desire to share either on food sponsorship? Because that seems to be a topic that people definitely want to have questions about or want to talk more about, or just specifically on sharing your experience. Do you have any lurking notions or any reservations that is there a certain kind of life event or circumstance that you feel like you might go out over, or do you feel like you are buying into the delusion or obsession that you're like Mr. Carpet Slippers, where after a sufficient amount of time, you can go back to certain behaviors?
Hi, it's Lynn, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Lynn.
Hi, everyone. Thanks, Deb, and everyone for all the shares. I really related to so much of it. And, you know, lurking notions that someday I might be able to moderate or eat normally. You know, at this moment, I have absolutely no lurking reservations, but I know from experience, especially my most recent experience, that it's really only a daily reprieve. And I'm happy and grateful to report I'm on day 9 of abstinence and have some really peaceful eating and living the last 9 days. And, you know, I'm just not in any delusion that it's always going to be like that. I mean, the fact is that I'm a compulsive overeater, and that does mean that there's going to be a time that comes when suddenly the idea of eating certain foods or taking liberties with foods is going to come into my thoughts. And if I'm not spiritually centered, if I'm not working all aspects, all three sides of the triangle, then I'm going to be more likely to believe the lie that my mind is telling me, and which is what I did. And, you know, what that means to me is that I have to practice continually to bring God into all my activities. I have to remember to pause and to listen for guidance and inspiration. And it can't just be me and God. It's, you know, I love the talk about the food sponsorship because I've had some really good experience with having a food sponsor and being accountable. And I do get blocked. I mean, I'm self-deceived on my own power. When I'm blocked, I can't tell the truth from the false. So being accountable and committing my food and then reporting it sort of at the end of the day, and not just reporting it to my food sponsor, it's really reporting it to myself and to God and to another human being, you know, what my day was like, what I could have done better, what I did well, looking at all of that. And if I continually do all of these things and make it a we program, and I don't like making it a we program. I want to, you know, I'm on my own, and my default is to, you know, do it on my own and figure it out. But, you know, and that's the beauty about going to meetings where there's strong recovery and the meetings on these phone meetings where people are like-minded. I get so much power
from people that are on the same path as me, and you know, and hear how other people recover one day at a time. So the sanity I've experienced in the past can be so vague when the sudden insanity comes in. So I really related to that, the suddenly and the vagueness. And anyway, I have no lurking notions today, and that is a good thing. So thanks for letting me share.
Awesome, Lynn. Thank you so much. And just thank you, everybody, just for your shares and your authenticity and your realness, and I just and your experience. And I'm just so grateful that we get to carve out this time to be together every week, and we get to share from our heart, and we get to share about what works and what we've experienced. And it's just, I also just love hearing everybody's varied experiences with the food stuff, and I feel like there's still a common thread with it, where the people who I am hearing speaking about, you know, everybody who spoke, it's like God is in the equation, and I think that, I mean, for me at least, when I do my 84 to 88 every day, and I sit in that, and it's important for me to actually ask those questions, you know, and to go through, and like somebody had already mentioned, bringing the food into it. And when I look at the general questions of where was I self-seeking, or where was I selfish, or where was I self-pitying, you know, when I look at that stuff, that's where I actually see what's underneath the behavior, which is kind of on top, you know. But when I'm actually really, really doing that soul excavation, and I'm getting deeper, and I'm really having an honest, like, my delusion is that I don't know the lies that I'm living in. And so I need to, like, be committed to a process, I need God to help me see the lies of the fears and the beliefs that are running my show. I need this work to reveal that to me, because that's not something that I can see myself a lot of the time, and that's certainly not something that somebody else can see in me, you know, because I'm not committed to a spiritual process. And so my first and foremost goal every single day is to sit in spiritual reflection time with God, and not just any old meditation, because if I want to do other meditations like transcendental meditation or, you know, Zen meditation, that's beautiful and that's fantastic. And the big book is talking about a specific type of reflective meditation where I'm taking specific questions into consideration. And I'm, for me, the prayer and the meditation and asking a question of God, and then sitting and listening and having a pen with me and a pad of paper and writing down that I'm feeling intuitive hits, like, that process for me is incredibly valuable. And I get what you were saying. I think, Tammy, you were saying, you know, that's great. If you have God, you can go and you can use that, you know, like, I'm not having that experience right now. And I still encourage people as newcomers to create that time, even though it feels like nothing's happening, like something is happening. And I know that, Tammy, you are doing that. And I just am saying that for all the people who feel like that isn't accessible to them, is to still to do pages 84 to 88 and to not just read them, but to actually sit there and be in consideration with it. And for me personally, I don't do my 10th step or my 11th step with somebody else per se, because by that point, I have cultivated this relationship. You know, by the fifth step, like, I'm walking hand in hand with my Creator, and I've created this access, and I continue to grow in understanding and effectiveness of God's will for me. And so my first plan of action is to have this review and to sit in meditation and to sit with God and to ask God to be guided, and wake up in the morning and to listen again and hear what guidance came through. And if there's a resentment, if there's some kind of nut that's really sitting with me that I feel like a day or two has passed and I'm still resentful at that person, or I'm still holding on to something, then I'll call my sponsor and I'll actually write out a formal resentment inventory, and we'll do a 5, 6, 7 and sometimes an amends process on that 2, 8, and 9 on it. So I take that stuff and I run it through the mill of my spiritual process, my spiritual program. But my first and foremost goal is to develop my relationship with God. And so when it comes to food, food for me is just another aspect of living. And so I take the same sacredness of food that I would with any other area of my life into my prayer time. And so I'm asking God, please show me what peaceful eating looks like, and I'm listening for that guidance. And oftentimes I'm getting guidance that is just coming directly from God to me, and sometimes it's helped me to be honest. And again, as I ask that prayer, help me to be open-minded, help me to be willing, you know, help me to practice the core principles of how to stay humble and in this program, and how to actually have a deep and effective spiritual experience. When I stay in those very, very simple, innocent questions and set aside everything I think that I know, like I'm always blown away with the guidance that I get from God. And so I still, for me personally, that has proved to be just this immeasurably gorgeous practice and relationship that I continue to cultivate and just get better and better. And, you know, it tells me on page 88 that it tells me, like, I am undisciplined. And so it tells me exactly what to do about that. So let me just turn to that page. It says, you know, I'm just going to read, because this is another promise that we get in step 11, we're then in much less danger of excitement and fear and anger and worry and self-pity and foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we are trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. It works. It really does. It really, really does. It says we compulsive eaters and restrictors are undisciplined. So what do? We let God discipline us in the simple way we have just outlined. How they just outlined it. They just outlined it in pages 84 to 88. They just outlined it in the first 103 pages of this book. And so I'm using this process to create the discipline because I'm undisciplined. And that has been what works for me, and that continues to be what works for me. And I love to hear what works for you. So let's keep this conversation alive. Let's keep it going. I'm so, so grateful that you joined the call today. And I'm excited to continue getting into the Jaywalker story next week. That's going to be really juicy and fun. So definitely stick around for that call next week. And let's go ahead and say the Serenity Prayer, and then we will call it a day. So, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Keep coming back, and I'll see you next time. Bye.